Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast, or as we like to call it, the Pick and Troll podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have Matt Moore by, well, it's the internet. If you don't know that by now, then you just don't really know what a podcast is, but keep listening to this. Matt, how you doing?
I'm tired, man. I'm tired. Don't have kids. Don't have children, because then it's bad because of my schedule. Like, I basically, like, you know, I don't sleep, and that's how I've managed to actually get to do this professionally, is I don't sleep, so I get to write all the time because I don't sleep. The problem is, when I do sleep, I have to sleep in that time period, and my child's like, that's a funny story that you have going on there in your little brain, Dad.
What I've heard is you just read them a bedtime story and they go to bed.
You know, and some people, like, their kids are like that. That's what, and I hate those people. Like, that's the thing about being a parent, is you learn to hate everyone whose kids don't have the problems that you do. And, like, there are lots of people that have, like, different, like, kids are different. Like, my kid generally is in a pretty good disposition. Like, he's generally pretty happy. He just doesn't sleep and is an incredibly picky eater. So it's like, everything's fine except for the instances, but, like, people whose kids, they're just like, oh, well, my kid just eats everything. I just want to punch them and throw them out of a moving vehicle.
You know what's awesome about having nieces? I have four nieces, is that when I get tired of them, I just hand them back to their parents.
Yeah. Yeah. It's better to have pet children than it is to have actual children.
Yeah. Big night of basketball, not just in the NBA world, but in the D3 college world. Jack Taylor, is that the kid's name?
Yep.
138 points on 108 shots. Now, let me just get this out of the way. It's D3 basketball. That means something in relation to what happened. I don't really care what it means. I don't really care what happened. I don't care if it's a gimmick. I don't care if it's an inefficient 138. I don't care if another guy had a better shooting night in the same game going for 70. I don't care about comparing them. I don't care about picking it apart. It's D3 basketball. The kid got 138 points. The NBA players went nuts over it. And it's just a moment. It's a moment, like you said on Twitter last night, it's trivia. Like, that's all it is. We do not have to analyze this. We do not have to pick it apart. We don't have to try to downgrade this kid as a pro prospect. He's a D3 player. Of course, he's not a pro prospect. Like, we don't have to break it down. We can just enjoy it. Like, I saw it trickling in on Twitter last night, and I was like, holy crap, that's really cool. Like, the 138 points. Wow, he took 108 shots. Wow, he took 71 threes. Nick Young must be really jealous right now. Like, that's all I thought about. I didn't think, like, oh, well, this is crap. Like, it's not better than Wilt's game. It's not better than Kobe's game. I don't care what it's better than or what it's worse than. It was just cool.
And I can respect that, and I don't take it too seriously.
Like, it's D3 basketball. If a kid from Kentucky did it, then we would have something to really talk about, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, my thing, though, is, like, I will say this. You said, like, the NBA players are going nuts over it. Kobe went nuts over it.
Yeah.
But a lot of the guys, we've got posts up this morning that kind of wraps up everybody that commented on it. And a lot of the comments were, he took how many shots? Because, like, all those guys you can tell are going, my coaches / teammates would kill me.
Right.
Like, he missed, because, you know, he missed 56 shots. And, like, Andy Glockner, like, last night from SI was like, well, you know, his EFG is still 65%, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, dude, he missed 56 shots. Like, the other guy was, like, hyper efficient that scored 70. I still didn't care, because I'm just like, look, it's D3, like,
right.
it's fine, he had a night, good for him, he gets to be, he'll go on USA Today, or on the morning shows, and he'll do on CBS This Morning, and he'll do all these things, and it'll be a nice little story for him, and he will go down as that guy that when you're in Buffalo Wild Wings, and you had 16 Coors Lights that you're trying to remember the name of.
Right, and it's just like, it was, I think it's impressive that he took 108 shots in 35 minutes. Like, that's impressive.
Have you seen the video yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm a little disturbed from that perspective, just because it's like, because
you thought it would just be transition threes the whole time?
Yeah, because, like, it was, and to me, it's like, well, that's not real. It's like, pop shot. Like, it's not, like, I'm not impressed with the fact that he was able to hit so many, but it's like, that was like shoot around. Like, He's just hanging back on defense and cherry picking. Like,
what was it? He took a shot like every 12 seconds? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I could see that. I don't know. Like,
because
I joked last night on Twitter. Yeah, you mentioned Nick Young. I joked last night on Twitter. Like, Doug Collins better keep Swaggy like away from every single part of media. Like, no ESPN. Like, I'm serious. If I was Doug Collins and somebody told me that a kid scored 138, I would call the hotel and be like, "You have to disconnect the cable in his room. Like, I need your phone. I need your iPad. You can't touch the media. Anything."
It's like, we've got a flight at 6 a.m. What's it going to cost to cut off the power for the next 6 hours? We'll pay it.
I just can't, you know, I just can't imagine taking that many shots. Like, yeah, it's fine. It's D3. Like, I'm not in the point where I'm not trying to go on a moralist kick, because I think that's absurd to be like, this is what's wrong with basketball or, you know, any of these things. It's fine. It's just, I have a hard time, you know, like, and here's kind of the modern balance. And this is like the balance of the internet, in my opinion, because it's the rush to condemn something unfairly,
yeah,
versus the rush to exalt something unfairly, and the tear between the two.
Right.
Because it's like, there are going to be people that are like, this was the greatest performance in college basketball history. And it's like, well, no, it was cool, but not really. Like, he needed to not be quite so inefficient. He needed to probably play a little defense in order for it to be a little more respectable. It's fine, but it's kind of like a magic trick. And then on the other side, it's like, this is what's wrong with sports. And it's like, well, no, it's fine. Like, the kid, you know, this doesn't, it's not like this kid doing this ruins basketball for everyone. It's fine.
Here's the thing. It's not like he didn't have a coach telling him to shoot. Like, this is what the coach tells his guys to do. Which is awesome. I mean, it's D3 basketball. Like, you should take it seriously in the sense that it's college athletics. But at the same time, there's nothing that's going to get these guys. I mean, you have to be an incredibly special player to find a way from D3 to the NBA. And if that's not going to happen, you know, sports are supposed to be about fun. It's supposed to be a learning opportunity. And the coach has figured out a way to make it fun. And all it is was a moment for that kid. He got on SportsCenter. Did he think when he signed up for classes at Grinnell College that he was going to end up on SportsCenter? Probably not. And he got to be on SportsCenter. That's cool. Like, I just think it's a moment. Just let it be. And seriously, 108 shots in 35 minutes. That's awesome. Like, that, you made Eddie House look like Rajon Rondo.
I asked last night about players that could take that many shots and not have their teammates just absolutely kill them. And, like, I mean, the list is very, very small. I think it's like, you know, you mentioned Pekovic just because everyone would be afraid of him, and I agree with that.
Ivan Johnson.
Ivan Johnson, same deal. you know, Kobe, Melo, Durant. Like, somebody said Westbrook. I was like, no, the Thunder would probably peel him back. Like, I think the Thunder would probably be like, no, dude, you can't do that. Like, Durant never shoots that much. So I think people would be like, well, if this is his night, okay. Like, I just can't imagine it. For those of you wondering, since 86, the record I looked up is 49 by Michael Jordan.
That's a lot of shots.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of shots.
Guess who's number two on the list?
I would probably go, like, Gilbert had to get a lot of shots up, right?
Chris Webber.
Oh, the, yeah. Against the Pacers?
I don't remember who it was. And look, I didn't take that time to look that up.
I think that was his 50-point game against the Pacers. This is good podcasting right now.
Yeah, like, Chris Webber. Why not? Chris Webber was number two, and then, like, the rest of them were all Jordan. It's like,
yeah,
it's like Michael Jordan, Chris Webber, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan.
If it's that Chris Webber 50-point game, I was at that game against Jermaine O'Neal.
Really?
Yeah, I was at the game. My brother-in-law had awesome seats. It was like three rows back, and we were at the game, and that was a fun time.
Could be. It's Indiana.
Yeah.
Yep, 51 points on 47 shots, 26 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 4 turnovers.
That's all kinds of fantasy numbers.
Yeah. So, and then, I'm sorry, it's actually not Jordan. It's Jordan and Webber, and then Bryant has the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the list.
Smoke him if you got him.
He also took 47 shots in the game. Bryant against Boston in 2002 took 47 shots and scored 41 points.
Yeah, but it felt like 41 and 43.
To me, that would have actually been the more impressive feat if the kid last night took 108 shots and scored 101 points. That would have been more impressive to me.
You know who scored efficiently last night? Kobe Bryant.
That's true. Yeah. Well,
he's changed his ways.
Mike D'Antoni, undefeated.
Best winning percentage in Lakers history.
I slept on that headline last night. You were like a cornerback jumping the route. You just like.
I knew there was an out route coming. I just jumped it and went for the pick six. I really enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't good, but you know, you could see things, especially early on. You know what's fascinating is watching Ron Artest in a up tempo game.
D'Antoni said afterwards he wants Artest shooting 10 times a game, and everybody was kind of like, "What?" And it makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
You know, there is a certain thing about, and I kind of mentioned this in the rundown during his press conference when he was talking about Jody Meeks. He said the thing I'm going to tell Jody Meeks is the only thing he has to do when he gets the ball is shoot it. And there's something about giving your players confidence that they need to shoot the ball and that there won't be consequences if they miss shots. I mean, I don't think that's a good idea to tell Ron he needs to shoot 10 times a game, but if it gives him confidence as a shooter, maybe that helps him focus in on making them. I don't know. Maybe it's a terrible decision.
Well, the thing, we've seen this. I've talked about this a lot, which is people kind of forget. Like, yes, you know, Stoudemire and Nash both benefited huge and Sean Marion, but one of the things about D'Antoni is everyone's numbers go up, and it's not just because of pace. Like,
yeah.
Guys that will go on to have miserable careers have huge gains.
It's just you just get better shots.
And it's better shots and it's confidence. And it's like he really – and part of this is, you know, I really think it's a good idea because we've seen early on this season they are simply not guarding Meta World Peace. Like, they are not guarding Ron Artest. Like, the defensive book on the Lakers is – do whatever you have to do to try and avoid Dwight. Foul him as much as possible when he gets the ball. Try and contain Gasol on the pick and roll. Have good instincts and fundamentals there. And at all costs, try and get the ball to Meta World Peace.
Yeah.
Like, that's the entire objective. And so, in that situation, like, what you don't want is him being passive and then working for, you know, a less open shot. Like, if he hits those shots, then if they can break that model, if they can break that book of leave Meta and trust everybody else, if you get to where you're like, well, now he's shooting 40% from three, we can't really live with that, then, you know, that opens up everything else. Like, it's pivotal for you to make it to where there are no good decisions defensively.
Yeah, when we were figuring out what when the D'Antoni news came down and we were trying to figure out, you know, how does this affect the team, one of the things I brought up was this team needs multiple 40% three-point shooters. It doesn't matter where it comes from. It just matters that it comes. And hell, if they, by some chance, turn Artest into one of those guys, even for a couple of months, that, you know, like you said, if you can break that mold to where teams have to start thinking about that guy, it continues to open everything up. I love the way Powell played last night.
It was a really great balance, I think, of...
Yeah. The way he was the go-between Kobe and Dwight and just facilitated, like, he is such a skilled player out of the high post. It's awesome.
17-11-7. I mean, you know, it was really good, and I think that they're going to have a lot of success there. It was an interesting game because of the balance, because I thought, you know, there were times when both teams played exceptionally well.
Yeah.
The Nets defensively impressed me. They really did an excellent job on Bryant for a lot of the game.
He ended up
having an efficient game because he really worked at it.
Yeah.
But Gerald Wallace did yeoman's work on him.
He was awesome. I thought Joe Johnson did a really good job defensively. The way they attacked, you know, I gave Avery Johnson a lot of crap for stuff last night, but their defensive game plan was pretty good.
I don't understand why they don't go to the pick and pop on the wing with Williams and Johnson more, because it worked almost every single time. And then they went away from it. It's like the more they put the ball in Joe Johnson's hands to initiate, like they kept doing it, man. I'm just like, I know you can't have Williams run every single possession, but, you know, Lopez was being so efficient down low. I thought he had a great game.
Yeah.
I thought Lopez just had a fantastic game.
Yeah, he really did. And I disagree. I think you can go with Darren every play to initiate. You know, he might get tired here and there. That's why you bring in C.J. Watson for 15 to 20 minutes and let him get a break or two. Darren Williams is that good. Like, he needs to have the ball in his hands to create. He shot poorly last night, but he had 10 assists, no turnovers.
Yeah, the no turnovers was really impressive. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Let's see here. They 34. Johnson and Darren go 12 of 34, and they still almost win that game.
Yeah.
On the road, it was a really impressive performance by the Nets. I thought it was a really great step forward by the Lakers defense too, and it was great so that we didn't have to deal with the Lakers aren't going to play defense under Mike D'Antoni. It was kind of nice to get that kind of removed.
Yeah, I was actually shocked at how I'm still not used to seeing Dwight not be Dwight Howard on defense. Like, he had 4 blocks, he had 15 rebounds, you know, he 23 points on 11 shots. The free throw shooting was bad, but he had a good game. But there's something missing with him defensively, even challenging shots. I mean, he really had 3 blocks because one of them was a goaltend that didn't get called. And 3 blocks is a fine game for shot blocking, but his rotations are weird, and even with bad rotations, they played solid defense.
Chris Duhon is going to get minutes, and I think it's going to work for them. I really do.
Well, he's going to get minutes until their point guards come back.
Yeah.
What did you think about Jody Meeks only getting 9 minutes? That shocked me.
I think they're still working him in. I think they wanted our test out there to guard the bigger wings.
Yeah, that's fair. Might have just been a matchup.
I think if they'd gone to Marshawn Brooks more,
yeah,
then probably Meeks would have seen more time. I think it depends on, you know, and I still think Meeks is probably going to get a lot of time. It's just kind of depend on what's going on. I mentioned this last night, and the Lakers bloggers kind of liked it, so I'll mention it here. You know, everyone's kind of trying to understand where everybody's going to fit. I think Darius Morris can work as a Barbosa type for them.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that comparison. But
there was a play where they leaked out, and he did that big swooping. He caught the ball in transition on the wing and drove baseline for the left side righty layup, and it was very Barbosa like.
Yeah.
So I was like, that is an area where I can think Morris can work. Like, I don't want to try and see him. I don't want to see them trying to make Morris into like Dragic to Nash's 09. Like, that doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. That would be a bad move. But if you just use him as a slasher and a spot up shooter, I still think he can be a decent spot up shooter. And just a guy. I mean, if he leaks out, the problem is you don't want him playing 1-on-5, 5-on-5. You know, you don't want him running a team. But if he's leaking out and he has a 1-on-1, a 2-on-1, a 3-on-2, then you like him having that kind of numbers advantage.
I loved how they used the Bryant Gasol side pick and roll.
Oh, that was art. That was
to
art.
Then have it be Gasol catches and then Dwight cuts.
Because really, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
And add Steve Nash on the wing to that. Like what do you
Dwight
do?
Dwight was cutting low, and that way, he was getting the ball with nobody in front of him, and you know they force him to foul. And even though he's missing free throws, like, that still just takes such a toll on your team.
Yeah, and he's not going to shoot under 40% from the free throw line every night. I mean, I think he had that horrific game to start the year, and I think the next game he went 15 of 19 or something like that. You know, he's going to have huge swings. The thing that I worry about with them and Dwight Howard offensively is all of the fouling that will occur with him does slow down the game. And it takes away the fluidity that Mike D'Antoni preaches.
Let's switch gears and go to Raptors Sixers, because I got to touch on just... I don't think the Sixers are very good. I just don't.
I have this conflicted thing on Twitter where you're trying to be delicate about it, but you really don't like the Sixers team.
It's weird because I really loved them last year. I thought that what they did last year was really great for so much of the year. They were so good defensively, and they're really great defensively again this year. And like, that's where I think Doug Collins gets the most credit, is like defensively they've just been excellent.
Yeah.
But like, you know, Drew Holiday was fantastic down the stretch. Like, he really is. He's going to be a most improved player candidate. Like, he's been so good. He has really been great. He's having a Mike Conley in contract year kind of deal where he gets the extension and lives up to it. Kind of start. That's where he's been at. And that's it's really great to see because we haven't seen that from him. They rely so much on two things which are not, I don't think, are sustainable, which are, I've started to refer to it as swaggy nonsense. Where, you know, I think it's great to get Nick Young on catch and shoot situations. But, look, there's only so many falling out of bounds, guy all up in his face, well contested, hand up all over him, you know, almost horizontal fadeaway threes he's going to hit.
That's his game. I hate this kind of response, but that is his game.
That is his game. But that's my problem. Is that's not sustainable. Like, it's just not. Like, that's why he's not an all-star. If it was sustainable, he'd be an all-star.
Well, right, but they're not featuring him.
They are relying on him a lot. And like last night, it was everything else is not working. Swaggy, go! And he got them back into the game. And then the Raptors, This is, you know, there are players where you've been watching so long and you're just like, I know why. Like, it seems simple to us. Because it's like, it's just, you know, there are natural instincts you have to fight, and then you also have to execute perfectly, and that's why it's impossible to do. Like, there are all these things that happen in basketball. Like, how could you leave that guy open? It's like, well, if you look, like, well, they ran, you know, it's like with the Celtics, it's like, well, they ran Ray Allen off of three screens. He cut through them to perfection. Kevin Garnett was moving on half of the screens. You know, and the pass was perfect. Like, you have to not make a single mistake, and you have to separate your shoulder getting through a screen in order to guard that.
Right.
Like, there's some of those. You cannot leave Jason Richardson open in the corner, and I don't understand why people don't realize this. It's the same reason I was frustrated with the Sixers last year when Spencer Hawes was like, oh no, I better play back against Kevin Garnett on the pick and roll so that he doesn't go to the basket instead of spotting up. Kevin Garnett never goes to the pick and pop.
Yeah, Kevin Garnett hasn't gone to the basket since 09.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? Like, you have to go with the pop hard there. What are you doing, Hawes? Like, every single time. But the Raptors just lost Jason Richardson on, like, three different occasions, and that's why they lost that game. They outplayed that team for so much of that game and still lost. And here's the thing. Even though I don't think the Sixers are very good, I cannot help but give them more credit because of how they're playing to win anyway. Like, they're making up for it by being smart and being effective when they need to be, picking their spots, hanging around, and making the most of their opportunities. It's just one where I'm like, can you really rely on this offense against a team that isn't completely stupid?
They're like how I remember feeling about, like, the second or third time I watched the Rocky movies. I love the movies. I still love them. But around the second or third time I was watching, and I'm a young teenager. I had become kind of a boxing fan. And I'm watching, I'm thinking, this isn't boxing. None of these guys are defending themselves. They're just swinging. And that's how I feel like the Sixers are right now, because they don't have Bynum. They don't, you know, they're just kind of chaotic. And it's like, they're just a boxer in the ring just swinging wildly. And if they connect, they connect. Last night they connected. And that's why I like the way they use Nick Young, because he's essentially their Vinny Johnson. Like, he's just going to come in, and if he's hitting, he's hitting, and if he's not, I doubt they'll keep going to him. But I'd like it. Like, they have such a disadvantage right now because they're not a traditional team. They don't have a big man to rely on, as well as Spencer Hawes has played this year. And what else are they going to do? They just have to throw haymakers the whole time. They just have to stand toe-to-toe and just start swinging and not worry about defending themselves. And something I loved last night, and This is purely a matchup thing, and they can't go to this often, but they put Thad Young at the five to close the game out, and it was awesome. They really played well.
He made so many big plays, including the steal on Bargnani at the end. Like, he made a ton of big plays last night for having a pretty rough game on the box sheet. Like, box score, like, Young had a really great game, I thought, defensively and overall.
Yeah.
I will all say this. Young's swooping hook shot that he made in the fourth quarter was just absolutely beautiful. It was one of the most, like, just, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, it's pretty great. This Raptors team is just so much more fun to watch with Kyle Lowry out there. And I know I have a huge man crush on Kyle Lowry, so I'm a little bit jaded and a little bit skewed here. But he's just so fun to watch. He wasn't even good last night, and he was fun to watch.
He was really aggressive. He kept that, like, he really sparked them because he was just hyper aggressive.
Yeah.
And you hope that he'll get some chemistry with some of those guys. Yeah, it's a shame that Bargnani's gone back. You know, I hope that he would return to what he did at the beginning of last year. It looks like that was just a 2 month outlier. He just, you know, 22 points on 21 shots. He misses so many easy ones, and he misses a lot of opportunities where he needs to hit. Like, if you're gonna constantly like be in position for that pull up trailer three, you better nail those. Like,
yeah,
you can't be wasting those possessions.
Yeah, obviously there's a huge disparity between the two, but those are the plays that even early on in Dirk's career, Dirk would just come down and just destroy the opponent with that trailer three.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and then not doing that is pretty bad. DeRozan, DeRozan's one where it's like he is playing better. He is playing much better. He's doing a lot more of what he needs to do. He's doing more things on the floor, which is really good. He's working more in the post, which is good. You know, he's still not, like, part of me is like, where was he late? Like, I wondered that last night. Like, why wasn't he
being more? Yeah, I kind of forgot he was on the floor.
Yeah. And that's one where it's like, you know, maybe that's the next step for him, is that he just needed to get his confidence up in a couple of other areas, and now he can maybe start. But, like, that's the thing, is it's pretty clear that their two best players right now are Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And those two guys need to be making plays constantly, and you can't just let, you know, Lowry doesn't need to be put in a position where he's going to get hammered and have, you know, and have to do everything on his own. Like, DeRozan's got to help him out there, and that's going to have to be a big part of what they do.
Yeah, and that's the thing about his game, is he's really improved, but I wonder where it goes. Like, where does it take them? Like, he's not going to be the best guy on this team, which is fine, but it's weird. Like, you see him developing, but I don't know that it fits anywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel like their defense is ranked pretty low right now, and they gave up a 47% shooting last night, but I feel like they're doing all the right things and the results start coming.
Yeah, I agree with that. And a lot of that's probably Valanciunas just being young.
Yeah.
Because they do need an anchor on defense. And since Dwayne Casey took over, you can see progress towards the goal of becoming a defensive-minded team. They just don't have the experience or the chemistry with each other yet to do that. And maybe that's going to need, you know, taking a few guys out of the roster, putting a few guys in, you know, improving the collective. But I think you can see improvement there, and I think you can see some light at the end of the tunnel. It's just not an oncoming train.
And to satisfy their fans, the Knicks win again. They were very good. I have nothing to add. Like,
yeah, Anthony Davis didn't play. Obviously, Eric Gordon's not playing. They should blow them out, and they did. And it was, I mean, that's part of being a good team, is taking care of those games on the road against an injured team that isn't very good to begin with. You know, that's what you have to kind of take care of business like that, and that's what the Knicks did. They did their job.
Well, a lot of it, I think, is that Knicks fans wanted to be, like, there to be more attention, for it to be like, look at what they're doing. And it's one where y'all need to realize, like, we figured out, and not just we, I mean, like, the basketball intelligentsia or whatever, like, we figured out, like, this team is legit about four games in, because they weren't winning with, you know, crazy late game stuff. They weren't winning with outliers. I mean, they're still shooting at an outlier clip. Like, the 3-point shooting is going to come back down. And when that happens, that regression of the mean is going to be painful. But, you know, their system in of itself is really terrific. And you can tell that. And defensively, they were great last year, and we all knew that. So it's one where we're surprised at the offense, but now that we've accepted that this is who they are and they're committed to ball movement, and Melo's making more of an effort all over the floor and they're not just running ISO, you know, we expect them to win these games. And we'll talk about how good they are when they win big games, but, you know, they're not going to get the credit for every single win now, just because we expect that from them. Like, they've raised the bar, and that's a good thing, because I think they're one of the elite teams, and they are, you know, right. And it's early, and this is not unlikely to be how it is at the end, just because of what we've seen in the past and history and everything. But right now, the two best teams in the East are Miami and New York.
Yeah, and they went 14-36. It's like 38.9% from three, which is good. But that was with Novak going 2-for-10. I mean, that's kind of impressive to me that everyone else shot well. It wasn't just one guy getting hot. I mean, Raymond Felton was hot. He was 5-6. But Novak shot that badly from three, and they still had a great percentage.
Man, Raymond Felton is just...
He's playing out of his mind.
Yeah. I always liked Felton. Like, I've never been one to make a whole lot of the fat jokes just because, like, I saw that it was that. But I always liked his game, and I always felt like he got a... And I do believe this, like, you have to have a guy that's comfortable with where he's at in his life. And, like, he worked so hard in Charlotte to get that contract.
Yeah.
Like, he really – and you could tell that he was excited. He was like, I want to be on this stage. And I'm a small market guy. I appreciate it when guys don't do that. But for Felton, like, it's fine. I understand it. Like, it's cool. Like, you know, like, Charlotte also never really committed to him. Like, Larry Brown constantly second-guessed him.
Yeah, and think about it. He was on the, you know, arguably the biggest college stage, being the point guard for North Carolina.
Yeah.
And then has to go to Charlotte on the NBA stage, which is the exact opposite. I mean, you can appreciate that he wanted to go back into that role.
And he's playing for Larry Brown, who makes all point guards hate themselves. Like, you know, so he worked so hard to get to New York, and then it was right when he was starting to get it together that he got shipped out in that trade. And, you know, I think it's cool that he didn't just, like, bail on the idea of playing for them again, because a lot of guys would have been like, they traded me, I'm going to hurt them.
Right.
You know, and instead he hurt all the teams he played for. you know, and Blazers fans, I mean, their blood is just
boiling. Oh, between him and Jamal Crawford.
And Kidd, like... Or not for the Blazers, but Kidd for the Mavericks. Yeah. Like, everyone's like, well, thanks for just mailing in last year, Jason. Appreciate that.
I don't think that's fair. Maybe he did, but I really have a hard time, you know, harping on older players in a lockout shortened season. I really do. Like, I just, it's very possible that he did the things that everyone is mad at him for doing, and that the assumptions are correct, that he just mailed it in. But that's he was 37 last year, 38. That's a hard schedule to go through for a guy like that at that age. Like, I just think we have to ease up on the lockout season analysis.
Having watched as much of the Mavericks as I did last year, that once they traded Chandler, that team bailed.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that team bailed, and, you know, that's where a lot of Mavericks – I said that last time on Twitter about Kidd, you know, Mavericks fans being like, thanks, Jason. And a lot of Mavericks fans, you know, said, like, this is on Cuban for blowing up that team.
Yeah.
And I can understand that, but, I mean, part of it is just, like, look, like, there comes a point – you know, we value veterans. If you watch this league enough, you know why to value veterans, because of the efficiency and the sharpness and everything that they do. Like, how smart Andre Miller is at layups and things like that. But you also come to understand how much of a big picture a lot of the veterans do. Like, you can tell when Marcus Camby's engaged versus when he's not over the last 5 years.
Sure.
Like, you can tell these things, and I just don't think the kid was engaged last year. And I'm willing to be like, I'm willing to say that his shooting performance was attributable to, you know, the lockout, and that it was hard on him, because I think it was. I think it was probably both. I think he mailed it, and that's okay. And to me, I'm kind of like, well, you know, that's just what's going to happen, because I also think about this a lot. We really do. We expect these guys to be great every single day, and I try and I have to give myself a break even when I'm blogging. Like, there are days when I'm just like, look, I didn't do my job well today. Like, I just didn't do it. I did not do it as well as I know I could have, because it's hard to do it 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Like, when I worked in an office, there were days where you just didn't get anything done. Like, you just didn't have your focus. You didn't have it. You know, you worked on some projects, but you weren't, you know, most of the time you were peddling around on the internet, reading blogs, and eventually writing them. Sorry about that. But, you know, you have to kind of live with and be like, you know what, that doesn't make me a bad employee. It means that I wasn't as good as I could have been yesterday. I need to recognize that and try and give more tomorrow.
Yeah, when I worked in an office, that was I mean, I would do my work before 10, maintain the rest of the day, and just work on my website. I was an awful employee. I mean, I got my work done, but in terms of going above and beyond, I didn't want to be there, and I just wanted to move on to something different. And maybe once the Mavericks punted on defending their title, which I honestly think that was the correct move. I think you overpay to keep those guys, and in 2 years, everyone's mad at you for overpaying to keep those guys. You can't guarantee that you would have defended the title and repeated, and now you're set up to rebuild quickly when Dirk gets into his twilight, and I think it was the correct move. I don't really blame those guys for seeing the direction of the team and thinking, ugh, this sucks. I don't really want to be here anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame them too much either. I do think, I will say this, I do think they would, I think you can rebuild easier by saying, we have defensive player of the year, Tyson Chandler, and Dirk Nowitzki, and that's your core. And then everything else you can figure
sure,
out.
Sure, that's
can find another. You can find another point guard to throw entry passes and hit threes.
Unless you think that you can woo Dwight Howard.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's which they still might do.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's, you know, so, but anyway, good on the Knicks for being where they're at. And, you know, I don't want to dismiss what they're doing. It's just a matter of, you know, I expect them to win these games. I actually, last night, I was like, oh, the Hornets are kind of competitive. I'm excited. I'll get to watch the Knicks. I haven't spent as much time watching the Knicks as I want to kind of just get the feel for what they're doing, because they've been in so many blowouts. And yeah. I was like, all right, I'll sit down and watch the second half. And then they went on like a 25 to -4 run. And they somehow caused the Hornets to lose points after the half. And then it was just over. And I was like, oh, okay.
One thing that I'm impressed with, and it kind of gets back to Felton because I think he's a big part of this, is the Knicks just don't turn the ball over.
They're leading the league, and then the NBA TV was harping on that last night, as well as the broadcast. They were only giving up 10 turnovers a game.
Yeah, and I think their turnover rate was like 11% or something like that. I mean, they just don't give the ball up. It's really impressive.
With as much as they're passing, do you think that's sustainable?
Probably not, but the fact that they've done it through 9 games so far, if it creeps up to 13% or 14%, you know, that's still pretty good.
I just feel like part of it, and talk about the book a lot, I think the book's going to get out on them and people are going to start jumping the passing lanes where they need to, and then, like, that's where there's probably going to be a hit.
Sure.
People don't really ever, like, think about that. They just see, oh, the team was doing really well. And then they hit a slide, and it's like, well, part of that's because all the scouts go out to dinner and say, here's what we did.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, nobody really thinks about how much of that is. Like, scouts are pretty territorial about their information, but they're not so loose-lipped as to not try and help, especially if it's a team like New York. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, that's one of the things that's just going to happen. Yeah, they're also, they've got the third highest percentage of opponent team turnover percentage.
Yeah.
That's really impressive as well. They're behind just the Hawks and the Clippers for turning the other team over.
Yeah.
They're at 11.3% right now.
That's really low. Like, that's unbelievably
low.
Unbelievably low.
Like, the Sixers are at 13.9%, and I'm not surprised because they don't pass.
Right.
Like, that's the other thing with the Sixers is they have the highest percentage of they have one of the highest percentages of unassisted threes. Like, they literally just hate to jack up shots.
That's the one beauty of Nick Young. You know, he is a gunner, but he is not a guy that turns the ball over ever because he's not trying.
Have you just repackaged that, like the fact that he takes pull up threes?
He's not. But that's the thing.
Turning the ball over passing.
He doesn't pass. He doesn't make bad passes. He doesn't drive out of control for shots a lot. He doesn't try to create too much off the dribble. He catches the ball. He takes a dribble. He shoots it, and that may not be a great offensive strategy, but he's not turning the ball over and he's getting a chance to score. I'm kind of falling in love with Nick Young, and I've never liked his game before. But the more I realize that he is so comfortable in this role, he's winning me over. It's the Jack Taylor in him.
It's the Ricky Davis in him, I think, that you're falling in love with. You're getting a little volume score of man crush.
How is Ricky Davis not a coach?
Oh,
That may be the name of the podcast today.
Howard Steve is not a coach. So there are, I think I looked, and it's funny. I didn't think that, it's kind of surprised me. 58 teams are playing basketball in the NBA tonight.
Yeah, they brought in a few college teams, a couple AAU teams. Only the
Grimer's going to play.
Only the Jazz and Grizzlies aren't playing tonight.
And I'm super excited because I was all, oh, my brother-in-law's coming into town because we had to kind of reschedule a lot of what we were doing with the holidays. So my brother-in-law's staying the night with me, and then we're going over for the holiday tomorrow. And so I think I'm supposed to work. I was like, oh, no big deal. I'll just reschedule. I'll have one of the guys cover. It'll be fine. Our good friend Royce Young, one of our bloggers, works really hard. He's been on a hunting trip that he goes on every year, and he's back today. I was like, oh, Royce can cover. And then you reminded me, I think Royce and I both have home games.
Yep. Nuggets at Wolves, and then we got Clippers at Thunder, which is an ESPN game.
So here's the really bad situation. My brother-in-law, who has very little patience for anything, he's in the military and has very little patience for anything. He's a hyper-intelligent person, and he just doesn't have time for a lot and isn't into sports. He's coming into town and to stay with me. My wife is already going over to my in-laws, so it's just me and him in the house with him having to sit there while I work and watch basketball.
Sounds like a great time.
So, yeah, I hate you guys for having home games. That's just not really okay.
I will be home for the late games if you'd like.
And I was like, Royce could probably like skip a game, right? Like Royce can take off. Like I can ask Royce to miss a home game.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's the ESPN Clippers game featuring two of the best teams in the Western Conference.
With Blake Griffin coming home to Oklahoma again, which is kind of Royce's guy. He loves him some Blake Griffin.
Yeah, so ordering a pizza, dealing with the awkwardness, that's how I'm entering into the holiday weekend.
And a lot of wine. Oh, wait, no, we wouldn't drink on the Joe.
Never. Drinking's bad. Some good games tonight. Toronto-Charlotte is surprisingly a pretty decent game.
That is not one I expected to be a game I'm looking forward to, but I do want to come home and watch that game.
Kemba Sanity versus KLOE.
I know.
Pistons
Magic, don't want to watch it.
Pistons Magic, wish it was erased from existence. Anthony Davis is out, and that's a bummer, because I think it would be interesting to see Hornets-Pacers as badly as the Pacers are playing. Hibbert had a breakout game. I kind of like to see how Davis guards David West. That would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah, that would have been fun. I'm just so disappointed. Like, obviously, Kyrie Irving breaking his finger. He's out for 4 weeks. It just ruins any watchability of the Cavs. Like, who knows? Deion Waiters may break out and be on his roller coaster of production, and it might be a game, but That Sixers team at the Cavs with Kyrie Irving would have been a fun game.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's like, and part of it is the Cavs and Conrad over at Feet of the Sword and Hardwood Paroxysm, he's constantly harping on how good the Cavs starting lineup is. It's just the bench. Well, it's the starters are really good because of Kyrie Irving. He's got a 30% usage rate, and now he's out. So
we're
about to see what the Cavs look like without Kyrie, and that's a different matter. Like, he makes all those other guys better. This is one that every single year is a fascinating and great game. Boston versus San Antonio.
Battle of the olds.
Battle of the old guys. This is going to be really interesting. Steven Jackson's out. The Spurs have re-signed James Anderson this morning. That should make a difference. the Celtics are going to be without Darko, who's likely to leave. You've got DeJuan Blair versus Jared Sullinger in kind of a weird, the older model of the Terminator versus the newer one,
right?
Kind of thing. Can't defend. Pretty good rebounder. Limited offensive set. Lots of hype around a rookie year. Probably going to fade out. Like, that's going to be kind of interesting. But there's always, I mean, it's KG Duncan, and that is always worth watching.
Yeah, dark horse for a sneaky good game tonight. Maybe game of the night. These are always good. Bucks at Heat. For some reason, the Bucks really can bring it against Miami.
I think it's that Skiles just knows how to run the defense at him. I think he understands a lot of what they do offensively.
Yeah.
The Bucks traditionally also have pretty, like, Skiles' teams have certain defensive principles that they just don't lax on. Like, they always close out and they always get back in transition.
Yeah.
Like, and they're one of the reasons that I don't buy into the whole, like, you have to give up offensive rebounds or defensive rebounds or yeah, offensive rebounds in order to get back in transition, because they manage to do both. Like, you just have to teach your players to be smart about it. So that's going to be, yeah, I think that'll be really interesting, because it depends on if Jennings, that we I just want to, you know what, I just want to see one game where Jennings and Monte Ellis are efficient together. Just one. Like,
that been, you don't cross.
Either one has been efficient, and the other one has been inefficient. I just want to see. It's like a double rainbow. I just want to see it once.
No, you don't cross the streams.
You don't cross.
That is not something you do. Quick pick before we go: Clippers at Thunder. What do you think happens?
God, that's rough. You know, I'm going to go with the Thunder, simply because OKC has guys who can at least keep up with their front court. They've got Kevin Martin to at least neutralize and somewhat Jamal Crawford. And as good as Chris Paul is, it's a road game. The Clippers have been so hot. I just feel like there's a good chance that the Thunder then is like, they don't have anybody that can guard Durant. I feel like Durant is due for a, oh yeah, game.
I gotta ride the hot hand, and I'm gonna say Jamal Crawford has a huge ESPN game.
And Jay Crawford,
I love me some Jay Craw, and I think he has a big game, and I think it. I think Blake Griffin has a nice return home, and really has a special game, and I think they continue to steal games on the road. They're still undefeated, 3-0 on the road.
Here's the terrible thing about me. That should also be the name of the podcast. Here's the thing that's terrible about me. I started going to J. Craw Cray Cray and saying that on Twitter. I actually say that out loud whenever he does something. Like, I say it in like a really like hyper-exaggerated quick voice. J. Craw Cray Cray! That's how I say it every single time to myself. Which is kind of an indication I need to have more friends.
That could be the name of the podcast, too. I need to have more friends.
I need to have more friends. Zach, I want to say that for Thanksgiving, I'm so thankful to have you on board. You've been terrific in the month that you've been on. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast, for reading the blog, and for supporting us on Twitter. And have a great happy holidays.
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.